gentlemen. Welcome to the French Connections Wednesday edition. Today's September 5th, ladies and gentlemen, 2007. Daryl Bradford Smith is my name. It's great to be here with you today. No guest today, but we have a rant today. It's going to go on, I guess, for a time here with information about recent events. And I have to clarify a few things and set the record straight on a couple of items that have been, sent around in both emails and on the Internet and other things like that. And I'm going to make a couple of statements and a couple of I'll give you a couple of places where you can check the information out so that you feel confident that I'm got my facts straight. And then we'll put it to rest. It'll be the end of it. We won't bring it up anymore, and we'll let the sniper snipe, and we'll let the crap slingers crap, and we'll let the people do what they do. But I thought, because many of the people out there have emailed me wondering if I was okay and what did I think and all this stuff, well, I guess what we'll do here is a little file. So it's going to start out. It's Mr. Bolin. And apparently Mr. Bolin is, in fact, okay. And interesting that I was never informed of him being okay. But since his disappearance and reemergence over the last few months, he has turned out to be a basher of the French Connection. Now, we have our detractors. There are hundreds of thousands of them, probably. Who knows how many there are out there, but I'm sure any Zionist out in the world that doesn't like us, so there would be immediately a detractor, and I'm sure all of their useful idiots have been convinced not to like us. So that would be the principal group of people that don't like us. So, but why would I need to even do this? Well, we worked with this man, his research. We gave him a home after his very unceremonious departure from a Southern Poverty Law publication. And there have been many emails that suggested that was not as accidental as you might have thought. I don't have any evidence that says it was a setup against us or not. I don't have any direct evidence, but people have speculated that was a setup from the start to get somebody within our midst to do exactly what has been done to us in these last 2 months. Now, again, I don't have any direct evidence of that, but when I go through all these facts with you and you are able to check them yourself, you'll be able to make your own judgment, as I always ask you to do. This is a due diligence thing again for you. And then we'll be able to move on to other issues in our other files, and I think it's probably fair. Let's go back to the beginning here, in 2005. Back in September-October period was the first time I ever became aware of Christopher Bolin, and at the time I found out he had a wife named Alia. And from Christopher, I found out that his wife was working on a project to inform the public about the Estonia sinking. And I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, this was back in GCN days, I put her on first and interviewed her about the Estonia. And she had privately asked me if I could translate some documents. Legal documents from a French lawyer who was handling the case in Paris for some court proceeding, and she sent me copies of the lawsuit that was written by this French lawyer. It was all in French. And so I read through it, and I got a feeling for it, but there was so much French legal ease in there and so many words of legal significance. I, of course, asked my wife to look at it, too, and she had the same problem I did with the phraseology and the different terms. And so we only could give her an idea of how the document felt. But anyway, we subsequently interviewed her. And this was at the same time. I was just beginning, I guess, my second or third month of work with Eric. And Eric had taken a break from working with me because he ended up on a on a trip here to Europe where he was hoping to come visit but wasn't able to. And he was here, I guess, with Jimmy Walters, and he did the rounds at some speeches and whatnot, and he went back to the States. And when I found out in November, I guess it was mid-November, that Christopher Bolin was at a conference in Europe, I suggested to Eric, well, geez, if he's going to be around here, why doesn't he come down for Thanksgiving dinner and I could meet him? So Eric said, that would be good. So he got in touch with Bolin because I didn't have a way to do that. And suggested it to him, and apparently a day went by. Chris checked on the price of tickets, and they decided that it was very prohibitive to come in from all the way from Geneva. I don't know why they were in Geneva, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not privy to that fact. But the conference was supposedly in Belgium, but they were in Geneva. Coming across France from Geneva to where I live, traveling through France is expensive. The TGV, the Train de Grande Vitesse, the TGV, is a very expensive means of transportation. And so they said it was too prohibitive, and Eric offered to help them rent a car. So they did, and they rented a very large car. It was one of those big luxury sedans, one of those six-seater dealies, like one of those big C-Class or 700 series BMWs. I think it was a Renault at the time, but it was very big. Very nice car, brand new. And they arrived late afternoon of Thanksgiving. And they arrived with a box of wine, five bottles in a box, and two children in tow, a young girl about 8 years old named Catherine, and a young boy, I think 11 years old, named Bobo. I remember my eyebrows raising when I heard his name, Bobo. I thought that was a little bit strange name to be calling your child every day, but people call their children strange things, I guess. But we sat down for dinner. My wife had put a lot of work into this, and I helped put a lot of work into having a nice dinner, and kids virtually ate nothing. Now, that's certainly not because we don't cook well, and they just didn't eat anything. They left huge plates full of food. There were large servings on each plate of meat and potatoes and carrots and turnips and vegetables and all kinds of stuff. And subsequently, when the desserts came out, they took one bite of that and left the rest of that as well. And we were more interested in cartoons and television. And Christopher and myself and Holly sat at the kitchen table. And during wine, of course, my wife had her obligatory single glass of red wine with her meal because she's a very French lady, and that's what she does, and she drinks a glass of wine. The Bolin family, by the main course, had already gone through a bottle of wine. By the cleanup and dessert, there was a second bottle already drank. At the time, wasn't drinking anything. I was sticking to fruit juices and whatnot. But I guess about 3 hours into this meal, a third bottle was gone, and my wife still hadn't had a second glass of wine. By the fourth bottle, 4 hours later, the mood of the table had become decidedly strange. That being, the Bolins were hammered completely, staggeringly hammered drunk. At such time, Christopher stood up in my kitchen with difficulty, and with red wine seeping out the sides of his mouth onto his shirt and red wine spitting onto my wife's linen tablecloth, began to sing the German national anthem and saying Heil Hitler. Now, my wife looked at me, and she was absolutely mortified. I didn't have a good feeling about these two folks when they came to my house. I didn't. Something was wrong. with their comportment, with the way they were. And I didn't know exactly how to take what I was watching, except to be as gracious as I could be about everything. And that was the interesting thing was the daughter was sleeping in the living room on one of our soft chairs, but their son was still wide awake listening to this stuff. In fact, he came out to visit during the singing process of this while he was doing it. So they staggered it into bed. We gave up our own bed for them, and they staggered into the bed, and they got up about 10 o'clock the next morning after we had already been up for 3 hours since 7. And my wife made everyone breakfast. The children had one bite of cereal, left a full bowl. Cut themselves another piece of cake from the night before, had one bite, and then went into the TV room and watched television, cartoons. Left the food on the table uneaten, again, for the second day in a row. The balloons came out and acted as though the night before hadn't even happened. It was amazing how incredible this whole scene was. And I just tried to gloss over it and make the best of it as I could. Now, we had some late breakfast, early lunch, and my wife suggested that they go for a walk and see the horses that we have in the area. They're not our horses, but there's horses in our neighborhood, and there's sheep and there's steer and cows and even buffalo here, and there's all kinds of things. They've got deer and wild animals, all kinds of stuff everywhere around this area. There's people are raising ostriches, and there's all kinds of stuff. If you take a walk long enough, you can see everything. But there's horses not far from us, and they all walked down, and I was in the back room. I don't know exactly what I was doing, but I came out, and the daughter and Christopher and his wife went for the walk, and their son is sitting in there watching cartoons. So I asked him, what are you doing? He says, I'm watching cartoons. And I said, well, aren't you going to go for a walk to see these farm animals? Now, this, you must understand, I'll go into this in a minute. But he said, no, I don't want to. I said, well, this is not a democracy. I said, my wife has done made a great deal of effort to entertain and show you guys something nice, something interesting, something new, and I think you'd be best served to participate in it and just try to get through it, even if you don't really want to. So where's your coat? And so he said, oh, I don't know. He looked at me perplexed, but he grabbed his coat and put it on and ran on up the street to catch up to them. 5 or 6 minutes took them to catch up, I guess, because they were made a bit of a head start. I guess about a half hour later, they all returned from the walk to see the horses and the sheep and everything, and they were returning, walking down the lane from where the farm animals were, and they got as far as my home, and Christopher declared that they were leaving. And I must tell you, frankly and honestly, I was relieved that that was the case. And so was my wife. In fact, my wife had been horrified by these people's visit and wanted them out of the house as quickly as possible. I told their son to go on this nature walk because it was the right thing to do, and that that this wasn't a democratic process, that he's an 11-year-old and he has to follow what the advice of what people are supposed to be guiding him with, which you're going to hear in a few minutes. I don't think there's any guidance there. My wife mentioned to me that that the level of problems in the son was obvious, that there was some emotional problems going on, serious ones in our view, and I don't doubt it was from living in satchels and having no schooling and the rest of it. But I'll go into that, and I don't want to digress from this part of this little history. Anyway, Halia said that she wanted to take a photograph before they left of me, and I tried to stay cordial throughout the parting. Never did I lose my temper, and never did I lose my my stand as a gracious host, trying to be at least. And I said to her, please, you know, don't publish it. She said, no, it's for our personal album. And I said, well, I don't want my photograph published on the internet, so please don't. She said, we won't. Don't worry about it. Well, you all know that that photograph has now been placed on the internet by these people. So much for that. Anyway, they drove away, and the sense of relief in me was enormous. My wife came out, and she said, well, they only wrecked our linen tablecloth, and no harm, no foul. I got in touch with Eric right away and told him this story, and Eric was like, whoa, what, are you kidding? And I said, yep, this happened in my kitchen, and you wouldn't believe it. And he said, wow, I'm really surprised. And he had his own take on why, and I won't put words in Eric's mouth. I won't even do that because it's not fair to do that. If he ever wants to share his thoughts, he will. But I did speak to him about it immediately after. And at the time, I was having a conversational relationship with a forum site who has since that time turned and stabbed us in the back for reasons I'm not entirely sure, but that's been the case now for about a year and a half. But I told him in a private phone call what happened to me, too. Now, you have to understand, at the time, I didn't know the Boleyns very well, and this was their first visit to my house, and this is the behavior that I got. One of the concerns that my wife and I had, and my wife's first thing was that I didn't like these people as soon as I met them, and that she was extremely worried about these children in this environment. And she said to me, don't they go to school? And I said, apparently not. And they live in hotel rooms, I think, and they go from place to place like gypsies. And she said, that's child abuse. And I said, well, you know, normally I wouldn't say it is, but from what I watched last night, it certainly is. Anyway, needless to say, my personal opinion of Mr. Boleyn was about a negative 10 out of 100 at the time. And I didn't have much to say about him after that first week, except that I was relieved that he was not in my home anymore. It was months that passed, and a couple of very good articles came out, and Eric sent them to me, and I read them. And one of them was about the Odigo messaging service, and another one was about Stewart Air Force Base, and another one was about something else, and I thought they were very well written, and what I did was I checked their veracity. After having had this experience, I checked to see if the things that were being written could be proven, and all of them were absolutely plausible in the research area, all of them. During that same time, I had put Michael Piper on the radio during that period from in the month of December. We were doing a lot of interviews at that time on Genesis. I was on Genesis at the time. And we were getting a lot of flack from the Genesis people because we were starting to mention the Lubavitch, the Shabbat Lubavitchers, and we were starting to talk about Rothschild. And this is when Anonymous Andy was putting out his timeline, and we were getting traction. A lot of listeners. In fact, it was remarkable how much exposure we were getting at that time. Anyway, time passed, and I guess about February, another good article came out. I'm not sure which one that one was either, but if you could check the archives of Christopher Boleyn's work, if it's dated, you'll know which one it was. But it was a very good article as well. And Eric and I discussed the possibility of actually interviewing Christopher because in spite of his boorish behavior at my home, we had not had a fight or an argument. Just fortunately, he just left my home. And so he said, okay, so this was, I guess, in February, and it didn't come off in February because Christopher was traveling. He was had come back to the United States after being here and went to Chicago and then was going across country to see Dr. Stephen Jones and Dr. Cahill and ultimately ending up at Eric's house, which he did in, I think, March. of that year. And so after his visit with Eric, when he was there, I believe, we did a show in May. I think March, April, I don't know, April, May. You got to check these dates because it's all checkable through the files and through the dates we did the interviews. You can check them against what I'm saying because it's all verifiable. I'm doing it from memory. Anyway, we did an interview. I guess it was about 5.5 months after his visit to my home, or maybe 6 months. We did an interview. From that point forward, we did 15 interviews between Eric and myself with him. 15. We put up two articles after he left AFP jointly with him. One he put up, he put one on Rumor Mill News, and at the same time we posted it on I Am the Witness. But it was still posted by him at Rumor Mill, and we put our same work up on our site. And subsequent to that as well, he did his own interviews on the French Connection. Each time praising the French Connection's work, that we were informing people, that we were opening eyes of people, that we were giving the public what they needed to know. And there was probably at least 15 or 20 examples directly from Christopher Bolin's lips that was the case, and certainly it was at the time. I never warmed up to this man ever because I believed that his lifestyle was abusing the children that he had. I remember when I found out he was coming out with a children's book, the irony of that. I thought how laughable the idea of somebody promoting a children's book when he is raising kids in this way. But it was ironic and actually sad. I knew that these children were in just some deep doo-doo. And of course, yeah. So anyway, time goes on, and we work together, and all of a sudden he gets into this arrest mess when he returns back to Chicago. And the first night that this happened to him, Eric was on the phone with me. And he got a call from Halia saying that in panic mode, panicking, that Christopher had just been arrested. It was moments after the arrest. And that they took him away and that they smacked him around in the front yard and so forth. So I immediately called people all over the world, people from Australia, people from Germany, Sweden, England. And it was late over here at that time. It was late afternoon, early evening, and I called everybody I could think of. And they began to inundate the police station with phone calls, and there were literally hundreds of them. And by the time they let go of Bolin, the phone was ringing off the hook, because of what we were doing with the calls. And many of us were declaring ourselves journalists, and wanting to know why he was arrested and what the charges were and everything else. And Bolin, in one of the files, credited those calls with having him being released early. And I don't doubt it because the pressure was enormous on that police department at the time. After that fact, of course, he was worried about what he was going to go through. And there was a lot of attacks being made on him by people like Wing TV, who you have subsequently discovered to be a bunch of lying shills. This guy, Mufkaka and his Giuliani girl, they were just spreading mud and lies and stuff about Bolin. And we stood by him fighting for his honor, and it was demanded by AFP that he denounce us for our efforts. Well, of course they're going to want us to be denounced because we're getting lots of traction at the time. This is now about 9 months after he visited my home. It would have been a year in November, but 9 months. We did several more interviews during that period. And we fought hard for for the truth to come out about what happened to him in his front yard and so forth. And he wanted, AFP wanted him to badmouth Eric. And apparently he refused. And because he refused to, they fired him. And it was at that time of his firing that we began to give him another outlet for his work. We told him right away, you have a home here if you want to put your research out. Of course, all of our research gets checked by Eric and myself before we post it, but that's when he did a couple of joint postings between Rumor Mill News and our site. And he did some interviews. At the time, he was having trouble getting anybody to pay attention to it, and I did several interviews with him trying to drum up support with Christopher and the people around him so that the court case would not fall down the memory hole and that he would be protected in some way by that. And we asked people to call the court and on his behalf and to call the press and to make sure that this thing did not fall through the memory hole. And he got several delays, I think five of them or six of them altogether. His first lawyer turned out to be bad, and he needed more money for that. And at one point, because he was so broke, I told Eric that the donations coming into the French Connection for our phone bills, look, I'll pay the phone bill out of my my family food money this month, and you can give that money over to Christopher for his legal defense fund or whatever he needs it for. And I told him to do that the subsequent month as well. And we even started taking donations for him on the site. Yep. And we did three more interviews after the 1st of January all the way up until his court date, or four more maybe. Yeah, four. And as soon as he was convicted, he disappeared. And who emerges but a man named Myers, who slept in his house, who turns out to be a Jewish gentleman from Alabama who worked for 38 years for Mark Lane in the American Free Press, staying in his house during this process. Who emerges but this woman, Shelton, who Eric talks to on the phone and gets a complete, first she was very nice and creamy with Eric, and then she turns out to be nasty, and then I get an email from her before I'd even spoken to her, ever. Threatening to sue me, threatening to have me outed as a charlatan and a liar and all this stuff. The attack was venomous. It was just way over the top, which didn't change a thing for me, nor Eric. We just said big blowhard, and that's what I called her, Dr. Blowhard. Who emerges after that but Chris's brother? Starts popping up on the radar. Then Christopher John Birkness starts popping up on the radar. Then, I mean, all of the Chicago 8, we should call them or something. I don't know. The Chicago 4. And Eric receives, but we go on for five weeks with nothing from Boleyn. Nothing. Not a word. No confirmation, no description of his stuff, only the Shelton woman to go by. We call up people that were at the court. Nobody wants to tell us the story. Nobody wants to give us any information on the trial, how he got railroaded. None of it would come out. None. And I guess about 7 weeks after the trial, which brings us into the early summer, we start believing that something has happened to him. Because there is a professional courtesy that one has with somebody who's been so supportive of you, especially with the finances and the calls and the repeated programs and everything, that you would never believe someone to be that much of an ingrate. It just wouldn't be in my thinking to be that way, so I couldn't imagine how somebody could be that way either. And so my only conclusion was that something terrible had happened to him. And I guess about seven or eight weeks after this trial, a two-minute phone call came in and to Eric. It's 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. And he said to Eric, "I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm all right, Eric. You got to stop telling people that I'm not." Well, we didn't start telling people for several weeks after the, as you'll see on the website if you go back and go to the Wayback Machine. It can, you can go into certain times of our, dates of our website and find out when we got worried. Well, we weren't worried for the first 3-4 weeks. I mean, you know, we were just concerned and interested, but the worry started some weeks later after not hearing anything. And Eric believed that he sounded rushed and frightened and panicked and in a bad bad straits, and seemed like he wasn't free to be sharing his whereabouts or what he's going through. Now, you have to bear in mind, ladies and gentlemen, he's not on a murder charge here. This is a misdemeanor. It's the lowest form of crime that you can be prosecuted for. So low a level of crime it is that you don't even get extradited from one state to another for this type of crime. It's a Class C, I think, Class C misdemeanor. Certainly not from another country, but even from another state, they wouldn't pay for the gas to go get you. You're not a high priority criminal. You don't make the FBI's 10 most wanted list. Well, that doesn't belie the fact that if you believe Christopher's veracity on all of these files he did, that he may be a target of Homeland Security, and of course that was always a possibility. So we always took the fact that he could have been abducted by bad people very seriously. But as far as him being able to at least tell me that he was okay, and maybe that he needed financial support or whatever, it never happened, never came through. So I deferred to Eric because the call went into him, and I said, well, you know, this is sounding bad, Eric, and so he agreed with me, and I agreed with him, and we said, well, we're not sure what happened to him, but it doesn't look good, and he may, in fact, not be safe. We may have been abducted, or he may not even be with us anymore. We didn't know. And we put in every declaration all three possibilities. Of course, our detractors put, Smith and Hofschmidt are always saying he's dead, and that's not what we said. We said that he's either abducted, he's incarcerated, or he's dead. Never did it come into our mind that he was possibly free to move around and just doing this as an intentional backstabbing. Well, new information has come to light that he was with a man named Jan Gilberg in Sweden. And he stayed there for a couple of months with this man, a journalist, Mr. Jan Gilberg. I don't know much about him. Maybe you could run down his credentials. I do know that he supposedly writes things about the Estonia, and that's how apparently they knew him from working on the Estonia project. But other people in Sweden were called, too, that would lend credence to their having been in the area. I think they were in actually Oslo when the calls were being made to all of the different people in Sweden. And they apparently stayed at this guy's bungalow on the outskirts of Stockholm. I'm certain he had a computer. I'm certain he had access to a lot of stuff. And it was there that they concocted their attack against us. And it was there that they probably did their photo imaging, because it was the camera they took the picture with of me was a film camera. But they digitized that and went against what they told me in my front of my house and published a photo. Started claiming or implying that I'm some sort of a military operative, when in fact, ladies and gentlemen, I'm a service-connected vet who has fought for his country, and so has my father, and I've told you that on the files before, and I've got proof of it. And so there you go. I mean, this is the thumbnail sketch of it all. The proof of Bolin's behavior in my home can be retrieved at opposing digits if he doesn't erase it, but if he does, then demand he put it back up, because I did say that, and he'll... I'm sure even though he's 24/7 against me, he'll have to at least admit that much. And the fact of Bolin writing in these hit pieces that he and I didn't speak for a year, well, that's a lie. And we spoke about 5.5 months later, and then probably 14 times more in the year that followed. And that we were the only people still fighting for him when everyone else had abandoned him, and that we were people that tried to support him financially, emotionally, and informationally. And now look what he's doing. Now, the only explanation for that, in my view, is that he's gone over. Or, he was always over. And this is the Trump, this is the whole card that we didn't know about. This is the way to try to bring us down. Now, I don't know which one it is. There's no way of knowing if he was a plant from the beginning or if this was just a recent turn. But the turn is evident. The turn is evident in his work. The turn is evident in the people putting his return on their website. None of them said anything about his case or fought for him during the whole time. But now you get Alex Jones putting it up and Mike Rivero putting it up and... who else? We got Jack Bloods putting it on his site, and we got Corbin. We got people. Just put Bolin emerges, and you'll understand what I'm talking about. How many of these people? But none of them were trying to help him during the other time. All of the usual suspects are now full time trying to help Mr. Bolin. Oddly enough, it stinks of a deception. It stinks of a Judas, a backstabber. And it just stinks. And, you know, this is part of the character assassination program that has been in full swing against Eric and myself. I mean, we get this 24/7. Just Google my name and you'll see that, I mean, Wing TV has not had an active website for a year and a half now, and it's still number one, trashing Daryl Bradford Smith. Yeah. It's astonishing that they've allowed these Google things, these Google searches, to go the way they do. And of course, Yahoo has me, 50, 60, 70,000 examples of me in the world, and of course Google has 25. But Google's also right outside of Herzliya, and it's owned by Zionist Jews, and of course they're using that search engine to help defame us. And it's pretty clear. But it hasn't stopped us. And, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, ladies and gentlemen. And my suggestion to you is to listen to our work. We are, from now on, not going to provide a place for Bolin's future work. But his present work, the stuff that went on before that I've checked, that Eric has checked, the BC, before conviction, Bolin, will be available, and we will rotate them up to be part of the learning process because we think they're important for the education, because the turn in Christopher Bolin is a product of recent developments or not. But it's more likely, based upon his behavior, that this has happened since his conviction, especially considering the people, you judge by the company you keep, Sheldon and Myers and, Yeah, and what's his name? Captain May and the Ghost Troops. Captain May and the Ghost Troops. Okay, and you know the Alex Joneses of the world who could tell you the entire story of World Zionism, but not mention Zionism is involved. He gives you all of the information, then says it's not involved. But these are the people now that he wants to encamp with, and so his job now is to trash us and raise himself up. But we're not going to spend any more time on Mr. Bolin's nonsense. We're going to give you the opportunity here to check the things that I've just described to you, and I'm sure I've left out some other heinous things that Mr. Bolin has done. I mean, the guy is, his skin is red as a pack of Marlboros, ladies and gentlemen. And, I'm not immune from having a drink now and again, but I don't drink, maybe once every six, five, six, 8 weeks. Who knows? This is a daily, abuse of alcohol that has brought this man to this. And there is evidence that there is a family connection to some serious emotional problems. And if you listen to Kay Griggs, Christopher would make a perfect candidate for some sort of pressure to be placed upon him. Now, if you believe Kay, and you take a look at some of the other people that have come out over time, take a look at them. you'll notice that our congressmen are this way. You'll notice that our many of these, look at Rush Limbaugh, and look at some of these, look at this guy, Craig, and look at, Barney Frank, Barney Rebel. Look at them all. I mean, just look. They're emotional and moral misfits. I'm going to go back for 1 second about the children here. These kids have not been, for the last few years, have not gotten an education that's worth a spit. They said they were homeschooling them, but this young boy was emotionally damaged, terrible. That's what I'm telling you. I would recommend that no French Connection person risk donating to these folks, because I dare say that they're no longer credible as brokers for the truth. I believe Bolin will try to redeem his reputation with maybe a couple of decent, hard-hitting articles, and that may still be the case in the future. He may try to refute these things, but I've got enough evidence that I could make this one stick, and I dare say he's probably going to want this one, this file, to go down the memory hole as soon as possible. But if he wants to, play hardball with it, you guys can provide the proof. You can go to the sites. You can check the stuff. You can do that. It's all there for you. But needed to be done, because we trusted somebody's. We trusted them, and we trusted the fact that one of our own had been put in harm's way, and we never bent. And I'm telling you, if this happens to my partner Eric, I will fight the same mad dog fight to make sure he's okay. And I hope Eric would do the same for me. And we wouldn't think of having done any less for this turncoat either, this Benedict Arnold. But you know, there is good that comes out of this. I mean, before this happened, we had a snake amongst our midst, and we didn't even know it. And that's a blessing when you're able to find that out before it's too late. It's a blessing. And I have to say that in this case, I certainly feel that this is a blessing, that this has come out now, and that we have found this man out at this stage. By the way, the inaccuracies in his recent wide postings, his emails that have gone everywhere, there are numerous problems, in fact, with what he's been saying in that. One of them, it's laughable that he's saying his firing from AFP was my fault, and then he says it's Eric's fault, too. That is laughable. The other thing is that we're responsible for him losing his case. The fact is, he's responsible for losing his case, not me. I didn't have anything to do with him losing his case. And those things are just nonsensical on their face. I mean, I didn't write those articles that got Bolin keyed into by Homeland Security or by Hoffman Estates or by anybody. He wrote them. How the heck can I be made responsible for the position he placed himself in? That's delusional, that kind of thinking. But he knows that, unless, of course, he is suffering from some sort of serious delusional problems. But I do not wish Christopher Bolin well. I hope he fades out completely. Just goes the way of the Wing TV and of the Tom Flaccos of the world and of the Stu Webbs and the Skolniks and the rest of these lying sacks of garbage that we've been able to toss out of this, and the Carl Schwartzes and the Deborah Simons of the world and the Mike Pipers of the world. I hope he just fades away. And I hope for those children's sake that they get the help they need, and they get themselves in school, and they get the kind of health care and the kind of stable home that they deserve as children, an 8-year-old and a 12-year-old. I mean, unbelievable. Anyway, That's the file, ladies and gentlemen. Very, very downbeat one. But I got to tell you, again, a blessing. We dodged the bullet, is what we did. And I continue to just do my best with these facts. And we have to take these challenges as they arrive, and we have to face them head on. And sometimes they are emotionally dirty. They're messy. And that's the case with this one. But it doesn't make us stop our hope that you will all understand the facts and bring them to people that you care about and show them to people that you are, that are showing an interest or even beginning to show an interest in them, because the real fight is not about Daryl Bradford Smith or Eric Hushmidt or Christopher Bolin and his wild, musings. But they're about saving this planet from a criminal mafia called World Zionism. That's the goal. And with or without myself or Eric or others, this fight needs to be continued. So your job is to take the facts as you find them and place them in front of as many people as you can. That's the job. And as far as the photograph that came out about me, I have really nothing to say about it, because to be honest with you all, I've been on television all over Europe. I think the audience reached 20 million. It went as far as throughout the Middle East and Northern Africa and all over Europe and all over Britain. And I think their audience was 20 million. And I did a half an hour long program with questions and answers on television. So this certainly was not the first time I'd been out in public. And I'm sure that MI6 and the rest of the bad guys who tune into us regularly and the people over in our second biggest hit numbers on our website come from Virginia. But I'm sure they all have pictures of me, and I'm sure the people that showed up at my front door some time ago know exactly who I am. And so, I mean, it's never been a big thing. I just thought it was just something that I didn't want to do at the time, and still would not have done that if this hadn't happened, if this man hadn't done that against my wishes. So anyway, there you go. It's not going to be addressed again after this, and you have questions, speculate on them yourselves. Dig out the rest of the information on your own. Don't email me about it. I don't want to hear about it. It's been a addressed situation, and I thought it was important that you had these clarified facts that you can all move on from. And this is going to close the book on this. Anyway, Eric may have something to say about it, and that is certainly his prerogative. And Eric does what Eric wants, and I do what I do. And we try to agree on things, and we don't always. But the fact is, he's my partner, and I'm proud of him. He works hard at this, and so do I. And I need you all to help us work hard, too. You know, again, you got a buck in your pocket that you don't need, send it to us. We could use it. We really could. The months go by, you know. Last time we asked you was a month ago. And we get a little bit of help here and there. Just enough to keep these lights on and keep us moving. It's basically it. And I want to thank the people who have cared enough in the past. Thomas and others, thank you. You help us. I appreciate it. The rest of you, if you don't have a buck in your pocket and you want to help, pump up passing out the information to everybody so we can get these people identified as soon as possible. Till the next file, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well. Bye-bye now.
You ask why you seek to fall.